told this fool to stop it. You should have made this blind man see.
I've got my pride back into my pocket. Oh, won't you bring her back to me?
All right, welcome. Hey, this is Studio W, The Buzz, your global radio network circling the globe. And it's time for the Soul Samness Show. I've got a special guest on today with us. And we'll come back and we'll do the introductions right after this, folks. Keep it locked right here on Studio W, The Buzz, your global radio network. give you my all, man. Oh man, what a jam. That's Miss Keisha Jackson. Hey, and welcome. This is Studio W, The Buzz, your global radio network, circling the globe 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And this is that show. This is that show, the Soul Savage Show. Tonight, our panel and host, E.B. and Whitney. E.B., understand that you have a very special guest on the line with us tonight. Please do the introduction.
Without a doubt. We are in the presence of music royalty tonight. Man. We opened the show with Millie Jackson's version of Luther Vaughn's If Loving You Is Wrong, I Come Don't Want to Be Right.
Come on.
Well, Millie is the first generation of soul. Tonight, we are honored to have that second generation with us. She's been in the music business for nearly 30 years. She started at 15 singing background for her mother, Millie Jackson. And you got to keep saying Millie Jackson. Wow. She later went on to record two albums with Sony Records. That second one was my favorite, by the way. You know, God Send Lover is my shit. She wears so many hats. She's a vocal coach. She's a lead vocalist. She's a background vocalist. She's a life coach. She's a mother. She's a daughter. Miss Keisha Jackson.
She's awesome. Hey, hey.
Little studio audience there.
Okay. Oh, that was a studio.
I was like, should I hang up? Yeah. No, Keisha. Listen. I'm gonna start with the story real quick because I have to thank you for coming on. You and I are Facebook friends, and I know you don't remember who I am or why we are Facebook.
I know your
friends.
Name. I don't think have we ever met?
We have.
Have we? See, I'm listen, bad. I'm really, really
no,
bad.
It's okay. It was so long ago. We met, it may be 2007, 2008. I don't remember the exact year, but you were on tour with Erica
okay.
Badu.
Okay.
And, I remember I was in college and the refund check was looking real good.
Okay.
So I was able to stalk y'all up and down the East Coast. Every city y'all went to.
You came to several shows. That's awesome.
I did. And I remember wanting to meet you and wanting to meet Erica so bad.
Oh.
And you saw me when it was in Atlantic City. You saw me after the show and you was like, come back here. And you made it possible for me to get in. And I was thinking, I'm about to hang with Keisha. You was like, oh no, I'm tired. I'm going home, but there's a meet and greet. You can stay and you can,
exactly.
You can hang with Erica.
I've never, cause honestly, I don't think I've ever done that before. I don't really know what it was that made me say, hey, come on, let's do this. But I don't stay for the meet and greets. I'm a grown woman.
No.
I'm going back to the hotel. Yeah, I'm
that
not doing
wild.
All that.
Uh-huh. No, but it meant so much. I was like, we became friends after that on Facebook. And I was like, you know what? Keisha Jackson is, as everybody says, she is one of the coldest vocalists out here. Like, I'm talking backgrounds in recordings with Whitney Houston, Aretha Franklin, Toni Braxton, Outkast, Erykah Badu, George Clinton, Faith Evans, like,
yeah.
The list goes on and on. But I would imagine that your start came from, like in your bio, singing background for your mother. Was it something you wanted to do, or was it something that your mama was like, girl, you can sing, come on in the studio?
Well, it was definitely something I wanted to do when I was younger, like 14, 15, like whenever she got new background singers, I was the one who went through rehearsals with them. So it kind of freed her up. Everyone rehearsed at the house, but it was always, it kind of freed her up for me to kind of handle the parts down in the basement. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I knew I could do it. I'd been asking her for a while to hire me on, and she did. So I was working with her throughout, like the holidays, summer break, and the holidays. That's when I would pretty much work with her. But then, at one point, one of her male vocalists that she had, they went over to London, and one of her male vocalists stayed because he got an offer to sing with some group over there, and she came back home and had a bunch of shows lined up, and she needed somebody to fill in. I was like, well, look like you gotta hire me. You know what I mean? That's what that was. So
yeah,
that's where that came from.
So so you're 15 years old, and all of a sudden you are, you know, you grown, you got a job. you're singing background for a legend, like for one, the OG legend for like one of the biggest artists in R&B. How did that feel at such a young age?
Child, that's my mother. I didn't think nothing of that at all. Like, it was nothing. It was in my mind what was supposed to happen anyway. You know
because
what I mean?
That's your mother.
Yeah, because that's my mother. And it's like, you know, sometimes she needed me, sometimes she didn't need me, and I just wanted to do it. You know, I mean, I just felt like it was supposed to happen anyway. I can't say it was a lifelong dream. I think I may have taken it for granted early on in assuming that it's just what I'm saying. I know you're going to hire me. And so there was a few times that she said no, and I was like, what? You know, and so that's the reason why that moment when she lost her background singer and he stayed in London, that was such a moment for me. Because previously I had been asking her to hire me on full-time, and she said, no, you're in school and whatever, whatever. And so I ended up leaving school in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and moving to Atlanta, and that was in 87. And then she was saying to me, no, you're going to work. You're going to, you know, she told me that I was going to register in school down here in Atlanta. And I was like, I don't want to do that. And so when she lost her background singer, probably about a month after I came, moved back home from college, that's when it was like, So she had to hire me because she was kind of.
She had no choice.
You know, yes, exactly.
All right. So, I mean, being the daughter of a legend, I would imagine that you just grew up like celebrities in the house was just a normal occurrence for you. Like it wasn't like you weren't all of a sudden starstruck now that you're on the road and you're meeting celebrities all the time. It was just normal for you.
Absolutely. Like my mother's friends were the Isley Brothers because they lived in Teaneck where we lived, and Ray Goodman and Brown, and you know, most of her friend B.B. King, Bobby Bland, Betty Wright, who's my godmother, you know, those were her friends. So those were the people who were over to the house all the time. Those were the people when they came out with a project, or she came out with a project, they were the first to let each other know, you know, and she would have come over to the house and listen to the album, you know. It was that kind of stuff. So yeah, that was pretty normal. I mean, when you're in that bubble, you don't realize what it is. You don't realize what it is. That's just your norm. It wasn't until later that it was like, oh, snap, like that was bad. You know what I mean?
Right.
But then you kind of catch it like, oh, man. You know what I mean? Especially, you know, when you get older. And see, these were my mother's friends. These were my mother's peers. So I wasn't the least bit interested in them folks at all. At all.
I get it. I get it all
the
way.
Because I go to school. I'm worried about my friends and you know what I'm saying? That's just not even what I'm thinking about. It's just that when you get older and you hear people say things about the Isley Brothers and you hear people say, you're like, oh, man, okay, so this was kind of a big deal. Yeah. So it's all hindsight being 2020.
Yeah, you have, like, you have the, I say that you are one of those, because there are quite a few of you, and we're going to get into it a little later, who are children of these huge superstars. And I just find it interesting that so many of you have inherited not only their drive and their spirit, but a lot of their voices. It's crazy. Like, you sound so much like Millie when you sing sometimes.
I do.
That it is frightening. we opened up with the If Loving You Is Wrong remake. But I've seen you sing that. I've heard you sing it, and if you close your eyes, you would think that Millie was on stage. It's wild.
Oh, man, that's amazing to hear, honestly.
Yeah.
Because it's weird doing it. I'd sing it with the Daughters of Legacy, and it's just weird. You know, it's just weird to do it. Like, literally every time we hit stage, I'm just wondering and hoping that I can do it justice. You know, a lot of our crowd is, like, they're my mom's fans.
Right.
So they're our parents' fans, period. So they're coming to hear the music done by their kids. And so that's really what it is. It's not, the majority of the audience is not really there for us. It's not until after they leave the show that we realize that we've created a new fan base. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah, like they come in for, you know, the music that they remember,
right,
like their
exactly.
favorite things. And then they leave and they're like, oh, well, I see now, you know, Keisha's cold on the mic, you know. Let me check out what else she's doing. I get it.
Exactly. In Atlanta, it's a different thing because I have my own following in Atlanta. But outside of Atlanta, yeah, it's kind of like, okay, let me pray I can do this song some justice, because, you know, her fans are going to be hella critical. And, I mean, you sound, and they say the worst things, yo. Like, they're like, oh, you sound good. You ain't your mama, but you sound, That's what they do. They do that to all of us. So it's just like, man, come on, man, with the backhanded compliments. But, yeah, you got a lot of people that do that. You know what I mean? And you got to learn to take it with a grain of salt. And,
right.
You know, when you've done the best you can, that's when you learn to take it with a grain of salt. Like, well, honey, that's it. That's all you're getting. So.
Yeah, I mean, I can only be me.
I did the best I could, so whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, okay, Daughters of Legacy. Who are the Daughters of Legacy, and what was the driving force behind that? What made you put this project up?
So the Daughters of Legacy is kind of open-ended, to be honest with you, because I'm welcoming more daughters as time goes by. You know what I mean? So currently right now it's myself. It's Heather Hayes, daughter of Isaac Hayes. It's Namfuyo Aisha, Betty Wright's daughter. It's Robin Charles, Ray Charles' daughter. And it's Issa Poynter, who is the daughter of Ruth Poynter and Dennis Edwards.
And what was the inspiration for you to put you know, these ladies together? Like, what made you wake up and say, you know what, I have an idea, let me get...
I had the idea years ago. It probably started about 6 years ago now, but initially it was a project that I was doing just women, and female band, all female, you know. And I wanted a poet, I wanted all females on music, on the instruments. And then when I thought about bringing a couple of people in, I realized that they were daughters. And I was like, well, what the heck? Okay. So basically what I did is I contacted Issa Poynter, who's Ruth Poynter's daughter, the Poynter sister. She was the only one that I didn't have a previous relationship with. So I just reached out to her because she works with her mom as a Poynter sister, and they travel the world. So I just kind of reached out to her, was like, hey, is this something that you're interested in? I reached out to quite a few people, but she was hella excited. Her energy was super dope. And so I just kind of brought her into the fold. But I felt like we're all doing this differently, but we're all doing this. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've been a background singer. Like, you kind of read down what I've done. Heather Hayes has her own corporate band. Aisha, who, Namfuyo Aisha, who's Betty's daughter, she's been singing background on with her mom ever since we were kids. So I've known her ever since I was a kid. Right. And then you have Robin Charles. She invited Heather and myself to an event that she was doing in Atlanta one time, and ever since then we've been cool. So it was kind of like, well, why don't we just make this happen, you know? So then I have a, you know, I started a radio show with Heather Hayes and Yama Brown, who's James Brown. No, Isaac Hayes III asked us if we do this radio. We were interested in doing a radio show. Heather brought me into the situation, me and Yama, and it turned out to be super dope for like 3 years. But Yama doesn't sing. But what she does is she kind of MCs. She comes in and, you know, you get a lot of James Brown, honey. Them break beats are nothing to play with. So you get a lot of that. Like, we mix all of it in. And for me, Daughters of Legacy is just about highlighting the legacy of our parents. So you don't necessarily have to be a singer to be brought in. I just feel like if someone else comes in and they're not a singer, if someone's dope at what they do, then I'm going to bring them in.
Right.
I'm going to bring them in, you know?
All right, so let's go back just a little bit. Now, when you released your first album,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I still have the first and the second. The second is my personal favorite.
Okay.
What was that like, being so young, being the daughter of a legend? Did you have to, like, fight for your own identity? Did they try to, you know, push on you, oh, you're Millie Jackson's daughter, that's how we're going to market you? What was that like?
Well, it wasn't great. It was tough because I didn't come up on a deal because I was shopping a deal. So there were some producers here in Atlanta that was, you know, I was doing demos stuff for, and they had a song that they wanted me to demo that they were submitting to the label for Diana Ross, and that was a song called Hot Little Love Affair. Well, the label got it and decided that they wanted the person singing it to do the song, so they started asking questions. the producers told them, oh, that's Millie Jackson's daughter. They were like, what? You know, so they feel like, you know, they automatically had, it was easy for them to market, you know, let's just go ahead and do this. But the problem was, when it came, they didn't know how to market me. Because on record, I'm not a shit talker. You know what
right.
I'm saying? And they, so to market me as Millie Jackson's daughter, and you know, my mother's crowd is very niche. So it's kind of like, well, how do we play this stuff on the radio and market her as Millie Jackson's daughter if mainstream radio doesn't really know? Like, we'd have to do double duty in trying to explain who this is. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the radio stations for that were marketed for my age group wouldn't know necessarily who Millie Jackson was in terms of, because their parents wouldn't let them listen to the music. You feel what I'm saying? Like, everybody, people approach me all the time and say, oh, girl, I remember I used to have to sneak downstairs and when my mother would have her parties and they would play your mother's song and I would try to sneak and sit on the stairs and listen to it. So it was, it became a bit of a nightmare for me because they really weren't sure what to do with it. And so the producers who, the production company that I was signed to, they ended up being super whack. I hope they're listening. And, you know, for them, it was just money. They weren't behind me in terms of quality of record. So, to be honest with you, I absolutely despised that first record because we cut the entire record in a week at
what?
One small studio in upstate New York, and I can't even, if I walked in there now, I wouldn't remember it. That's how little time I spent in there.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
It was a quick wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, and I hated it. Like, I hated it when I was doing it. So I didn't really care if it came out. I wasn't trying to shop a deal anyway, whatever. So, you know, that's kind of how that came about. And then when it came to the second album, the label, Epic, decided, that was when Epic, when Sony bought Epic.
Right.
Sony bought CBS, which owned Epic and Columbia. So that's when the, basically my first record was on vinyl and the second one was on CD. Vinyl was no more between the two albums. And the label decided to cut the middleman out, and they signed me directly to the label and cut the producers out and decided to give me, you know, put me with producers that they knew, you know, they would like the Untouchables. And then on the West Coast, you know, there was a group called Body, Letitia Body. We did a song. I was kind of rapping on it. Anyway.
Hey.
So, you know, it was better. And I felt like, okay, you know, that's better. I still wasn't in love. I think what kept happening with me is that I kept getting caught in the crossfire of Michael Jackson, who was on the same label. And I was like, come on, like, you want to ship me with Michael? Ain't nobody. I'm like, who the hell is Keith Jackson, child? We're trying to get this new Michael Jackson together. So radio stations, you know, they opted to play what they knew, of course, and what they had to play. And so I never got any airplay second time around. And I just like, please, can I just get out of this thing? Because I didn't really sign up for this thing in the first place. And they were like, sure. And they let me go. Probably the easiest release from a label ever.
So, I mean, okay, so that second album, though, like, you had, I'm a sucker for background vocalists. You had some heavy hitters on there. You had Terry Robinson, Lisa Fisher, and Carl Thomas on singing backup, for, like, on your album.
Yeah.
Like, before
they
were popping, like, for real, for
That's
real.
That's exactly. So. Carl wasn't out yet. Carl was signed to Diddy, but he wasn't out yet. I think he had been sitting for a couple of years. And Character Productions, who basically, Troy Taylor, who is the manager for Trey Songz now. Troy Taylor produced that song, and he brought in Carl Thomas to sing background. I didn't know Carl. I don't know. He was like, I got a deal, too. I was like, oh, okay, well, let me look out for you. I mean, it was like that. Like, neither one of us, you know, he's got an album coming out, but he wasn't even done with his stuff. So, you know, it was kind of like that. Lisa Fisher... And I mean, I kind of just couldn't believe it, because when I tell you baby, when it came to Luther, like, all things Luther and Luther background, like, I knew it. I studied it. Man, backwards and forwards. So I knew who Lisa Fisher was, and the guy who was producing it, he was like, well, I'm going to have Lisa Fisher come in and do the background. Like, she cut a different day than I did, so I didn't see her or meet her then. And then he sent it to me. I was like, what? I was just, yeah, I couldn't believe it. You know what I mean? I was like, man. And I just felt like, I need to do my lead vocals over, child. This is a mess up in here with Lisa Fisher. Like, I felt like I wasn't measuring up, you know? And that record was kind of hard because he kept saying, I need you to sing it like you a fat lady. And I was like, what? He was like, I need you to sing it like you got some girth. And I was like, oh, man. That's why it sounded so, I woke up one day. And I was like, don't even sound like me. This is a mess.
I was like, Azora done came back and she recorded a song with Lisa Fisher on background. Yeah. I ain't mad at it, though. I have two more questions for you.
I'm sorry, real
quick. Go ahead. No, go.
Cool part
go
is,
ahead.
I was doing Outkast 20, the 20th anniversary tour, and we hit the U.K., and when we did the U.K., we were on the road as Outkast. We were with Bruno Mars and the Rolling Stones, and Lisa Fisher is singing. She sings background for the Rolling Stones. And
right.
So it was such a 360 moment because I was able to tell her 20-plus years later, like, you sang on my record. And she was probably,
right.
She was looking at me like, really, I did? The sweetest, but child, she didn't know who the hell I was or nothing. And then when I said Joshua Thompson, you did him a favor, she said, oh, my God. And she remembered it because I guess he didn't call her for too many favors, you know. And,
right.
You know, and I was like, the song was called Godsend. And she was like, oh, my God. And she just gave me a hug, and she was sweet. And I'm still not convinced that she knew who the hell I was, but that's all right.
It's all right.
We're going to take a picture so I can say, I met her. We're going to take this picture right quick, and that's so I can post it for the gram, and then we're going to keep on moving. So that was
we're
that.
We're
going
to keep it moving. No, I love that song in particular. It is my favorite song on that album. And I have, like, I have your mixtapes and everything. Actually, we'll be playing some of that stuff later in the show, but, I have two more questions before I pass it, to my co-host. Talk to me a little bit about, One Voice Entertainment and everything that you do, vocal coaching, because I know that your godmother, Betty Wright, like, she is, like, vocal mm-hmm. coach extraordinaire.
Like, yes.
Any and everybody you know who sings today, Betty Wright taught them what they know. So when did you decide that was a passion of yours and that would be the thing that you wanted to do?
Well, it kind of started with offers for gigs. People would call me and say, hey, are you available for this gig, that gig? And my schedule was so crazy when I was on the road with Erica and Outkast simultaneously at one point. So it just got to where I didn't have room to breathe. People would call and ask me, could I do a gig? And I wasn't available, and I had to refer someone. But I realized that referring someone goes so far beyond, you know, ooh, this is my friend and she can sing. So what was happening, it took one time for me to refer somebody and them embarrass me, that I just decided to create a training ground, per se, where basically we get together every week, and this is back in the day because we don't do that anymore, but we get together every Tuesday, and we create a blend. And we have to, the more you sing together, the more you learn to blend with each other so that you're not just sticking out. And, you know, basically taught them the do's and don'ts of background singing. Like, it's about playing your position. It's about knowing your work before you get there. It's about being on time for rehearsals. It's about not trying to outshine the lead vocalist that you're working for. It's about making them feel comfortable and secure, you know. And so basically what I did is basically I taught them the business of background singing. We worked on blends so that whenever you called me for some one-voice vocalist, the sound was going to be very similar. So I was trying to create a sound that came out like the Clark Sisters, or just where you can't tell when they're singing together, you don't know who's child. If you're not watching them, you don't know who's singing what. Like, you know Dorinda is on the bottom, but that's because you know them.
Right.
Think, if you don't know them, you don't know who's singing what, because that blend is so tight. So that's what was my purpose, was to create a blend, a sound that came out of here so that when people called me, they knew exactly what they were going to get.
And I guess that brings me to the last question. It's tied into that speaking of that blend,
uh-huh.
Like, one of my favorite things, I love, I think that the best harmonies and the best blends you get from families, you got the yes. Clark sisters, you got the yes. Pointer sisters, you got the Winans, you got the Emotions, the Jones.
Like, you got the Walls group.
The Walls, listen, the
Baby.
Walls, the Waters. I mean, it's
yes.
these voices, you
Correct.
Get that.
Correct.
But you, I've watched you sing on stage with mm-hmm. people I know good and damn well you're not related to, but
right.
the blend is so on point that you guys just kind of, no matter who you're singing behind or who is singing lead,
yeah.
You guys, you compliment that so well, and all together it just like elevates it to the next level. Like, where did that come from for you? Was that being your mom's daughter and singing back
it's
up for her that you
listening.
Learned to blend?
No, it's about listening. Like, when I was with my mother, you know, my mother's a soul music artist, so soul music doesn't require that kind of blend. Soul music is really about individuality. Like, if you listen to my mom's old stuff, like you had Sissy Houston sang, and they were studio music, so some of that stuff was blended incredibly well. Like, they were phenomenal. But some of that stuff, like when you're talking about hard soul music, everybody in the band had a mic. Everybody, you know, and it was just really about singing through with your gut. You know what I mean? So the blend wasn't really necessary. Now, for me, I differentiate between soul music and R&B music. R&B, when you're talking about the Emotions and you're talking about the Jones Girls, that's more polished. And then that's where you have the real good blends. But when it comes to soul music, child, that stuff is just everybody singing all over the place. Like, i.e., James Brown. Like, everybody in the band had a mic. What do you need? Soul power. They just said it however they said it, whatever accent they had. It was just what it was. And the feel. The feel was there. So for me, singing background for different artists, it's just about listening. It's about understanding their cadence, their timbre. You know, their vibrato is, you know, some people have a fast vibrato like Denise Williams, and some people have like a slow old church, you know, and so it's just a matter of being able to control it, recognizing it, and then being able to do it. But many people don't listen. They're not listening to the other person. They're just listening for the notes, the harmony. Mm-hmm. They're not listening for the blend, you know.
And you know how to walk both worlds, obviously, because I've heard you blend, and it, like you said, you don't know who's singing what. You got to be staring into their mouth to try to figure it out. But then I've also heard you get real raw and just and that's, you know, that's just more my preference. I like that raw, like,
because
that's who I am. But yeah, it's like that's me. But
when I was with George Clinton, that was tough for me. Well, when I got with Outkast, like, I left Erica, who's, believe it or not, very polished, like, very specific musically. And so when I got with her, there was a discipline that I had to have that I had to completely let go of everything that I had been used to doing with Outkast. Because that's very loose, very funk, very, you know. And so they kind of, in their vocals, mirror, like, Parliament Funkadelic. So it was kind of like, oh, man, like, so to go to Erica and, you know, some of them, they could read music, child, I couldn't do that. I was like, play it one more time, let me hear it. And so it's about being able to listen and catch it, you know. It's about your retention being good, like all of that. And because I don't read music. I don't play an instrument. It's just a matter of like, okay, like, you can't be the last person in the room to figure out your note. And it's a lot of pressure. So, you know, the more you do it, the more you just kind of learn to hear your parts and to kind of, you know. So you work on the note first, and then you work on the blend.
I mean, you got it down pat. I'm going to pass it to my co-host, Whitney.
Hey, Whitney.
Hey, Keisha.
How you doing?
Glad to have you. I'm good, girl. How are you?
I'm good.
Well, when you laugh just now, like, I could just hear your mom, that this, man, I know Evie had already mentioned how much alike you all, you two sound alike, but it just like clicked for me in that moment. Anyway, moving on. you mentioned, that in 87 is when you left school and you went to Atlanta. And when you said that, I was like, had I done that, my parents would have been like, you tripping, you going back, or like, we about to beat you down.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's what it was, though.
Okay. Oh, okay.
That's what it was. The thing is that mom wanted me, okay, when I was going into my freshman year in college, she said, I'm moving back to Georgia. I was like, to who? She was like, Georgia. And when I said, you say back, like, I ain't never lived in Georgia. Like, I was born in Brooklyn, raised in Teaneck, New Jersey. So I was kind of like, what you mean back? And see, you got to understand, like, the Atlanta child murders had happened, and I was scared as hell to move to Atlanta. And I bucked, like, for 3 solid years. I'm not going to, you know, and I was a teenager, just bucking, just doing, being whatever. And she was like, so once I bucked and it worked, and I went my freshman year to school, and I bucked again. I went my sophomore year, my junior year. She was like, I ain't playing with you. I ain't playing with you. And then when I got to school, I was like, whatever. She going to let me stay. Child, she did not pay one damn dollar of tuition. She didn't pay one dollar of tuition. And so I was there, and it wasn't until, and I was trying to do whatever I could to stay. So I was cheerleading captain in high school, so I became cheerleading captain in college. And the coach for the cheerleading squad was over financial aid. And she was trying to figure out a way to, like, maneuver it. And she was like, child, you have not been independent for even 6 months. Like, I can't do it. Like, you got to go home. And so, you know, eventually the headmaster of school was like, Keisha, you got to go. I was like, what? And so literally within 2-3 days, I was on a plane. I put all my stuff in storage, knowing I wasn't coming back for it. I put all my stuff in storage. And moved to Atlanta and was very, very, very upset about it. And that's the reason why I opted not to transfer and go to school in Atlanta, because I was just bucking. And I was pissed.
Okay.
And I was like, you not going to make me go down there. They country, you know, they be killing boys, little boys. I ain't, you know what I mean? So I was like, hell no, I'm not doing this. And so, you know, she would have me go look for a job, and I was like, yeah, I went. She knew I was looking for those damn jobs. And then that's when her background singer stayed in London, and I was like, well, it looked like you got to hire me. So I kind of won that. That's how that went down. I did not leave school to become a singer and defy my mother. My mother didn't pay for my school because she wanted me in Atlanta.
Interesting. So just kind of looking like back over all your experiences and everything, like we mentioned, you do so much. Have you ever thought about putting all of this, like, in a book or doing, like, a documentary or something like that, kind of to tell your story? And
I have. I'm actually working on it loosely right now. It's just I can't, you know, just trying to keep it together. Trying to stay focused on that is a little challenging for me because I'm always working, and I know at some point I'm going to have to sit down and get it done. But I haven't been able to do that. But I've kept a journal ever since I was 9.
So oh, wow.
All of that stuff, like from 9 to about 17. Until like probably 17, like consistently, like write an entry every day. And then from 17 to like 25, it was only when something, you know, monumental happened in my life that I made an entry. So I have... Yeah, because half the stuff that was in there was like, I went to the store today because it child stuff was a waste
of time. It's still a part of your story, though.
It's still part of my story. I did go to the store, but, yeah, so, I, you know, with all that I have written, you know, I was trying to figure out whether I should do just like a journal entry book, and that would just take a whole lot. I just have to go through them, you know, and pick which ones I would, you know, do for the book, and maybe just a book of entries. You know what I'm saying? And you can see it from the eyes of, you know, a daughter, you know, the daughter, like you're seeing it straight from my eyes from, you know, 8 years old on. So it will get goes through all my teenager. That was a thought, but I felt like that's kind of lazy. So I'll revisit it a little bit later. But, yeah, it's definitely been a thought, more than a thought.
Well, good. I just helped it become more of a thought and put it out there in the universe. So hopefully that comes to you a way that you can put it together. Because, yeah, I think that would be phenomenal. And also just looking at what it is that you're trying to do, like continue on the legacy of your mother and the other, like, soul greats. A lot of our history sometimes is told through the eyes of other people who tell it for us. And so the fact that we still have you here, who has this rich history and all of these things that many of us, you know, may not wouldn't be able to experience or see for ourselves, like coming from you, it has a different you know, perspective and light on it that other people couldn't bring to it. So yeah, I really hope something like that comes out. I think that would be dope. You also mentioned, like, just in some other interviews that I've seen, that your children are part of your motivation for the things that you do. Can you kind of share, like, how the bond between you and your mother helped influence, like, the relationship that you have with your children today?
Well, to be honest with you, it was kind of tough for me, like, when I had kids, because I don't think my mother was ready to be a grandmother. She actually said it. And I didn't plan the pregnancy. And I was just kind of like, so I kept it from her, not just trying to avoid her response to it. My mother is a hustler. She's always going to work. She's a workaholic. Uh-huh. And so I knew that if I told her I was pregnant, she was going to give me, I mean, child, read me about how do you mess up your record deal and get pregnant. Like, people don't get this opportunity. Like, you're messing it up, you know. And I just didn't want to hear that, because I was scared enough as it is. I didn't find out until I was already, like, 3 months.
Oh, wow.
So it was kind of like, okay, so we're doing this. Okay, so who do I tell? Nobody. I didn't tell anybody. And then, and I didn't tell my mother because I didn't want to hear that. Like, you know, it's like, it's over. It's late. Like, it's past that.
Right.
So you may as well save all that, because we're doing this anyway. Like,
right.
You know. So I had a flight to L.A. To record a song on my album that I did with Eric Gable. And I think it was called Love Don't Walk Away. I can't even sing it. I have no idea how it goes. I just barely remember the title. And I had to go to L.A. to do this song, and it was Holland Dozier Holland, who's, like, famous Philadelphia International producers. And so the record label insisted that I do this song with them. And I was supposed to do the photo shoot for my second album cover. And I got out there, I was in the studio, and I started having cramps. And I was like, uh-oh.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, so I ended up delivering in L.A., while I was working on the album. And then I told my mother. I told my mother the day I had to fly. Yo, this is crazy.
You didn't know that entire time?
I knew. She didn't know. No. I didn't tell her anything. I called my mother because I was worried about flying.
Right.
To L.A. so close to my due date.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, so I got a lot to tell you. And
catch you up on some stuff.
And she was like, what? I was like, well, she was like, are you pregnant? And just the way she said it, immediately, I was like, I'm so glad I didn't tell your ass like 4 or 5 months ago.
Right?
Like, you already cussing me out. I said, yes, I am. Why would you do this? Why would you? And I was like, she was like, Keisha, like, you're messing. Like, Keisha, record label's going to drop you. And I was like, I know, but maybe not, because what do you do? I was like, tomorrow. She was like, she was just quiet. She was like, what? And I was like, tomorrow. She was like, I said, so I'm calling you to find out, like, how often do people deliver on their due date? Child, why the hell was I on a plane flying to L.A. on my due date? Like, it's the most ridiculous, like, yo, I mean, that's really the epitome of being young and dumb. Like, for real. Like, I just was, you know, no fear. Like, I'd be like,
sometimes that's a good thing.
And to, yeah, but that's not okay. All the way from Georgia to L.A.? Like, this ain't no short flight.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Anything could have went down. You know what I mean? And, you know, who knows? Like, you know, but I honestly, I know that the ancestors have always had my back, because I've done some really dumb shit as a kid. And when I look at my life and I go, wow, okay, what? And sometimes I tell my stories, like, and people are looking like, wait a minute, what? Just like this particular story. Yes, I had a flight on my due date, and I went to L.A., and I called my mother and told her, and that's how that went down. And 3 days later, I had a baby. 5 days later, sorry. 5 days later, I had a baby. So, yeah, it's just like, I know I'm covered. I've been covered. You know, right. I'm not going to push my luck. I stopped pushing my luck a long time ago because you might only get two or three good ones.
Yeah. That's true. So, yeah, that's
like,
true.
Really? You saw me through
yeah.
them. You know
yeah.
what I mean? And I just decided, okay, stop being stupid and, you know, make smart decisions, and there you have it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So are those types of situations what got you to become a life coach? Like, were you just wanting to try to help people through help them avoid some of the stupid decisions, if you will, that you made in younger years? And not the pregnancy.
Maybe.
I don't mean that in that way, but
I know what you mean. Maybe so. I mean, I think just life lessons. I think what happened is my experiences, it gives me a different outlook on things. Like, you know, in hindsight, you can say, like, yo, you can't do that. Like, I was lucky, you know what I mean? And I don't
right.
share my experiences with everybody because I don't want people to think, like, oh, she was all right, so shit, I'm going to go on. You know what I mean? I don't want
mm-hmm.
people to think that either.
Yeah.
So, but with the life coaching, I realized that so much of what people are able to do vocally is tied up in their past. And like, for example, I have intentional conversations with my clients. I have an assessment when I start, and I have conversations with them, and I listen to how they talk, and I say things that will make them happy and kind of, their voice is way up there, and I say, and those are notes. Those are notes. So what happens is when they sing their song to me, you know, I'm like, well, what song mm-hmm. you going to sing? When they sing their song to me, it gets to, you know, I will give them things, I'll test them on things, and they'll be like, oh, I can't hit that. You know, and I'm like, well, you can hit that because you just hit that when you were talking to me. And mm-hmm. so it's tied up in the mindset. Like, it's, you can hit it, but the fear of not being able to do it, you cannot do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very, very true. What you believe that you cannot do, you cannot do.
Right.
It cannot happen. So for me, it was about helping people to will themselves into a place where they could do it or try it. Like, if you crack, you crack.
Mm-hmm.
But so much was tied up in, like, with the older women, for example, it was, you know, I got married, I had kids, my husband was like, if you don't stop that shit, you know, this is real life, you know, and they just
right.
had to literally put their passions and everything to the side because now they're a mother and wife, you know,
mm-hmm.
and other people, they had a bad experience, and, you know, people receive trauma differently.
Right.
And they take it in differently. And so they could have gotten booed at an open mic. They could have gotten booed at the middle school talent show. Or, you know, their parents could have said, you ain't doing that when you grow up. That's a waste of time. You ain't no damn singer. You're going to be a doctor. You know what I'm saying? Especially
mm-hmm.
with black folks, because we always push for our kids to be way more than
mm-hmm.
what society tells them they can be. And
mm-hmm.
so it was so often it was looked at like it was, this ain't worth, this ain't gonna make no money doing that. You need a sure thing. You need to go to school. You need to get your degree. And so people psychologically had it tied up in whatever that experience they had, whether it was
mm-hmm.
in middle school, whether it was recently, whether it was whatever, they are convinced that they can't do it. But something brought them to me. So I said, well, you here. So
mm-hmm.
let's do it. And for me, it happened so often. Like
mm-hmm.
I realized that there was a psychology behind it. And so that's why I decided to be a life coach so that I could give, so I could approach it. I feel like I've been approaching it the right way, purely coincidentally, prior to that. And so when I became a life coach and got my certification, I realized, damn, coincidentally, what I've been doing, what I've been saying is right. But at least now I have, you know, I have a certificate, I have paperwork, I have, you know,
right.
this is another iron in the fire. I got another lane I could go down whenever I decide I want to do this. But for me, I can educate with them feeling confident that I know what I'm talking about. And this is not just my,
right.
you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I had two different clients who attempt suicide and called me. And it was
my
the freakiest thing ever because one was on her way to a lesson here. And when it came to, like, she was late, and it was really raining hard, really hard outside, and she called me, and she was crying to the point where I couldn't even understand what she was saying, and I was like, yo, you know, you slow down, slow down. She kept saying, I can't take it anymore, I can't take it anymore. And she had been talking to me about some of her issues prior to, but she was like, and I was like, what do you mean? Just come here. She was like, no, I'm just going to do it now. And she keeps the gun in her car under her seat. And I was like, yo, like, this is freaking me out. Like, and where she was parked was about a half a mile at most up the street from me. She had just decided to go into this parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it was got empty because, you know, it was late at night. It was kind of a strip mall. And she was just like, I'm tired. And I was so afraid, like, that I got to say the right thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to say the right thing. I can't say cliche shit. Like, girl, your life matters. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I have to really come with what's going to touch her to enough to make her think about it. And that thing had me stressed out, and the only thing that I could do was just be myself and to say, girl, because you know, girl, now, you put that, and that's kind of how I dealt with her, very gently, but it was still like, come on, man, like, you better than this. Like, you know this.
Right.
You talked about this. You heard my shit. I've heard your shit. Like, come on, man. And I was just so afraid to get in the car and go up there because I didn't know what her reaction might be if she saw me suddenly.
Right.
She might just try to hurry up and do it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I just didn't know. Like, I had never dealt with that ever before. And so I talked her into coming to the house. And, you know, I always keep snacks and cocktails. And I was like, this is what we're going to do. Come to the house, you know, have you a little drinky drink, you know, let's sip, let's snack. And we just sat there and we talked for hours until I felt comfortable enough to let her go home. And I felt 100% comfortable that she was going. She was absolutely fine because at the end of the day, she was talking to me like, girl, what the hell was I thinking, child? Cause, and she wasn't putting on, because I'm a very, very good reader of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I trusted her. And I said, look, I'm trusting you, man. Like, don't let me down. Don't let me down. And I knew she regarded me so highly, I knew that meant something to her. Don't let me down. Don't call me with no Keisha, I changed my mind shit. Like, she's like, girl, I ain't gone. And to this day, we are great, great friends. And literally, I've never brought it up to her again.
Wow. I'm glad you were there. Glad you were there. That's,
everything, but I mean, I'm glad I was too. And so it happened after that with someone else. It wasn't as, like right now, it was about somebody talking to me about thoughts of suicide. You know, I just feel like if I'm not here, ain't gonna make no difference. And that kind of talk. And I was like, yo. Like, and so I feel like that first situation equipped me for the second situation. And I feel like everything is by design. But that situation where she came from the parking lot to my house and we chilled here for a couple of hours, that was the moment I said, I gotta get certified. I gotta get certified. Because I want to make sure, especially in those situations, that I say the right things, that I approach it correctly, that I, you know, and every situation is different. You know, somebody else, it would have taken me to go to the car, drive up for them to stop. But for her, I wasn't sure. And I was like, I'm not taking that chance. I'm not taking that chance. I'm just going to have to trust her to drive here. And she did. It was crazy. So that was where the life coaching thing came from.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about kind of being tested by fire with that one. Cause I don't think I've dealt with that on an adult level. I work with kids, and so it happens, I think, more often than people may realize with younger people. And the things that I've seen, like, in recent months, it's just, like, there's not really a word to describe it.
Right.
But, I can definitely relate to that. And I know there's days that I've come home, and I'm just like, I hope I see that person tomorrow.
Yeah,
like, I hope I handled that right. I hope
I
set the safety plan in place right. I hope these people, you know, come through, like, cause you never know, but.
You just don't know, and kids deal with it on such a different level than we
do.
Like, they haven't been through life experiences to know, like, I can get through this shit. I've been through similar things in the past. Like, this is devastating to them. And, you know, it's their existence to go to school
yes.
every day and have to deal with that same
yes.
group of people that bully them, or that same group mm-hmm. of people that talk shit, or that teacher that doesn't give a
yep.
damn, or that,
yep.
you know, or, you know, even if they don't catch it, like, verbally from people, they see that, like, I can't necessarily afford these sneakers, and I can't
mm-hmm.
do that. And now everything is so about glam, and do you got the,
yep.
I mean, I thought, like, having the new Jordans back in the day was a big deal, because back in the day up north, like, people would steal your sneakers.
Right,
you know,
right.
The street, like, they would steal.
Right.
But, like, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to take it back,
because
right?
it was a big deal, yeah.
Yeah, I took it back to like troop jackets. They would steal your troop jacket. You know what I mean? Your Pele. Yeah. But like now, it's a whole different thing. Like they're literally hitting you online anonymously, so you don't even know who's behind it. You know, it's
yes.
it's psychological
it's
warfare because these kids are going to school and they don't know if the person who threatened their life is sitting right next to them in class because they're on some. You know, they got some alias name, you know, online, and it's just, it's awful. It's awful.
It is, like, though, yes, like, ditto to every single thing you said, that is exactly it. And so,
yes.
with that, leading to my last question, so saying all the things that you just said, knowing everything that you know now, if you could go back to that younger version of yourself before you started taking the mic, before you started performing, before you became this person who you are today doing all of these wonderful things, what's a piece of advice that you would tell yourself to prepare yourself for your future?
Don't internalize it. Don't internalize it. Like, it's such a hard, it's way easier said than done. But once you realize that 99% of it has nothing to do with you. Like, you know, the kid who is bullying feels like shit about themselves. Their
right.
home life is probably super shitty. You know what I mean? They're,
yep.
You know what I mean? And so it's never really about the person. They look for a vulnerable person to, and that's what, you know, I was bullied when I was a kid, you know, and so I was afraid I was very introverted, and I'm still very introverted. Not because I'm scared, because I don't think
right.
I'm scared too much.
No,
right
I can
now,
tell because I'm introverted. I can tell.
Yeah, but I'm very like child. I don't feel like I'm the one who says I'm coming, and then be like, well, I think I'm gonna stay here the house, take off my shoes.
Really?
I will be so dressed and
right, right,
off.
Right.
Like, let me just. That's a mess because all my friends are like, "TJ ain't coming." They,
yeah.
They, like, I just like my solitude. You know what I'm saying? I like my solitude.
Yeah,
I like my space.
You
know, and I don't like chaos, and I don't like
mm-hmm.
all that it takes to go out. It's like,
yes.
I'm going to be there for 30 minutes because I don't want right. to be around people anyway, but it's going to take
yep.
me an hour
yes.
to do makeup and figure out what am I going.
Wow.
And
what
so,
I'm wearing.
Yeah, you know, but for me, like, you know, I would just tell myself don't internalize it because it was tough getting past that kind of stuff. Like, it was hard because my mother was always on the road, you know,
mm-hmm.
so it was me and the housekeeper, you know, we had a live-in nanny, and it was just tough. And, you know, she was Jamaican, child. She had all these sayings, and I loved her to death, but I didn't understand what the hell she was saying half the time, you know, because she had a thick, thick accent. But I loved her. Like, oh, my God, I loved her so much. Like, and she had my back like nobody else. And I think people should realize, because I did. So what I would say to my younger self is try not to internalize it. It's not about you, even though it still hurts. It's not about you. But what happens is, like, with every time there's a void, there's always something there to fill it. Like, for me,
always.
You just got to look for it. Like, you gotta yeah. recognize that it's there. Like, my mother was gone a lot. Like, my mother was literally going overseas for, like, months at a time and, you know, to do
mm-hmm.
a tour over there. And it wasn't like now. Like, we all had to, you know, she was like, I'm going to call y'all on Thursdays. At 5 o'clock. So we already knew that at Thursday, 5 o'clock, whenever she's overseas,
mm-hmm.
that's the day. We gotta gather around the phone. We gotta whatever, whatever. And, you know, but there was always somebody there. But you have to like recognize that they're there. Like
right.
somebody is always there that got your back. Like somebody, it might be, the guy behind the counter at the bodega. Like, you know what I'm saying? Somebody
right,
that you just
right.
run into every now and then, like, hey, Mr. Such and Such, hey, da-da. But they really are rooting for you, man.
Right,
they
right.
They really are rooting for you. It could be a teacher. It could be somebody at school that's not your teacher necessarily, but they got you. Like, and
yeah.
I know that I would not have been able to get through those. So many crazy experiences I've had as a kid, there's no way that I would have gotten through them if somebody wasn't praying for me, if somebody didn't have my back. Like, because
yeah.
it got bad, but it was like always somebody there. You just have to look for them. And I just, you know, I just happened to recognize, like, oh, you here, all right, I guess you'll do. But then later on, it's like, no, they did. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for
like,
real.
They was,
yeah.
they was the one. So, I mean, I know I'm very big on spirituality and just knowing one's self, paying attention to one's surroundings, paying attention to, like, the energy in the room. Like, I don't really play that.
Mm-hmm.
People don't come to my house. I don't know who to keep. I'm coming. I'm going to bring my uh-uh. Mm-mm.
Uh-uh.
I don't do that. We don't do guests. We don't do that.
Yeah,
and because it's really necessary. Like, and I feel like I'm very discerning because of it. I'm very, very discerning, and I always have been. And I think that if people just look just a little to the left, they will see that person and that energy that's rooting for them, been rooting for them the whole time. Like, you don't have to feel alone, because people feel
right.
alone out here, yo. You know?
They do.
They do. And they're only alone because they chose to. They chose not to share what somebody said to them online. They chose not to tell that, you know, they got, you know, hemmed up in the bathroom at school. So they are alone,
right.
but, like, if you share it, like, you straight. You straight. So, yeah.
All of that was necessary. Like, that was all needed. I appreciate you for sharing that. Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome.
And
so,
we actually, I was about to say, we actually, the host of the show, it was her show. We didn't think she was going to be here, but she's on. She said she had a question for you, Keisha.
Okay.
Oh, Keisha, I'm such a fan. I'm just sitting here listening to all the stories. And when you mentioned spirituality, it's a jazz musician. One of my favorites, Sonny Rollins, he has
uh-huh.
a quote where
uh-huh.
he says he tried to play the music, the chord progression as best he can, and he just lets the spirit take hold because he's, like, practiced yoga
yeah.
and meditating for, like, decades. And I wanted to know, in terms of, like, vocal-wise, what is it something, is it like, because whenever I see, because I've seen you perform, like, many a times with Erica, and it was, like, such a spiritual
yeah.
feeling, those blends that y'all had. I felt like it was just like a gospel, like, spiritual moment.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you thinking in those moments when you're impacting an audience like that?
Honestly, in those, and I don't want to mess up your perception, but I gotta be honest with you. Like, it was so stressful for me. For a long time, I mean, I was with Erica for 11 years. So for a while, it was very stressful because Erica doesn't, like, we have a set list, but there's no telling what she's going to do at any given moment in the middle of a song.
Right.
You just got to watch her. So much on stage for me is not.
That's gospel, though.
It is.
Because we do that. That's in church because I'm a musician, a professional musician. And when I came from a gospel background first before I started being a professional musician,
mm-hmm.
and we just had to watch the choir director because she would repeat the song like 3 or 4 times. It's like, dang, I'm like, damn, when you gonna finish the song? It's like,
yeah.
it kept going, and it's like the energy keeps going, and that's what I felt when Erica's performing. So what you're saying, that is like gospel.
It is.
When you're in church,
so
it's the same
thing. I'm a thinker, and I'm a I'm an overthinker, and for what I don't want to do is screw it up. I don't want to be the one person on stage that just didn't catch it.
That's,
and was like, oh, my bad, oh, shit. You know what I mean? Because she'll get backstage and be like, Keisha Jackson, what the hell was that? I'm like, I know, I fucked it up. You know what I mean? So I just don't want to be that one.
I was the same way, too, because I overthought, like, oh, man, I'm going to mess up if they keep going. It's like, we wouldn't plan this, and I want it structured a certain way. But sometimes that spontaneity, it's something about it that's, like, discipline at the same time.
Yes.
Because I feel like
yes,
old school, old school artists like, you know, like James Brown. Like Bootsy Collins said that James Brown's style was that it was like he was disciplined, like it's like one take, get it done. But when he went to Funkadelic, the partner Funkadelic, he was like, I felt free. And so, yeah, it's a whole nother
thing. That's how I felt. That's how I felt when I was with George Clinton.
Right.
It was like, but they had to teach me. Like, it was a really short tour, but they had to show me how to, like, child, loosen up. I was like, well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. That's not what you sang last time. And they're like, nah, just go in. I was like, oh, man, you're, like, killing me. So for me, like, on stage with Erica specifically, like, with Outkast, it was definitely more of a spiritual thing for me as support because we could do more of whatever we wanted to do. As long as we didn't step over, it was all going to be tasteful. Like, I can't just bust out with a solo in the middle of Dre's verse. But if that had happened, you know, Dre would stop and turn around and be like, hell yeah. Like, that's just how it was on stage. So the show was never the same, but it was not the same because we all controlled it. You feel what I'm saying?
Right.
With Erica, she's the one at the wheel. And so for me, like, it's always like, okay, it'll be on my toes. But you know the stuff that she kind of does pretty regularly. But every now and then she'll throw songs up there that I never heard, but it was like something that she wrote. Like, you know, a couple of years ago. And she was like, you know, I wrote this song. And I was like, what the hell is this getting ready to be? Like, and she would just start it, and her keyboard player, RC, who's been with her from the beginning, he's the only one that's been there for so long.
Yes.
And so he just put some chords on top of it, like literally in the moment. And, you know, I just find pieces to harmonize with, you know what I mean? Like as we're going, you know what I mean? And then we have a song. Like then whenever she adds it, I know what I'm doing. But it's very experimental, and it's a little nerve-wracking for me. A little nerve-wracking, but prior to the show and after the show, very spiritual. On the stage, never. Not for me. Not with Erica.
Wow.
With Erica.
Right.
That's a
five. I just got one more question, and I was going to ask in terms of I wanted to know the LaFace, did you start background singing through LaFace Records? Was that how you met Outkast? I mean, that whole musical family dynamic happened, like Outkast, Sleepy Brown, because I'm such a fan of that whole musical collective. Is that where it started from? And Deborah Killer, too, shout out.
What happened? Yeah, shout out, Deb. What happened was I was down here. I had asked the label to let me out of my record deal, and at this point I was just gigging. And so I got a call from a homegirl of mine, and it was like, there was a group called Black Girl that was rooted in
Atlanta.
Yeah, and one of the original girls, Tammy Davis, she called me and was like, "Yo, like L.A. Reid wants us to do a session," and I was like, "For LaFace, man, you have to understand." At that point, everybody was trying to get in LaFace,
right.
So TLC wasn't signed yet, like no, you know, it was just like fresh and new, and I was like, "Okay, cool." So I was like, "Well, what is it for? Who is it for?" And I had never done a session outside of like my own or like my mom's, but I had never done for anybody else. So, you know, we got the call, we showed up when we were supposed to show up, and it turned out to be Toni Braxton's Seven Whole Days record. She was a brand new artist, and it was a new song called, it was another song called Whenever I Sing, which didn't make the album. And Daryl and Babyface in L.A., you know, they told us what we were singing, we sang it, we did it, and once we did that session, they just kept calling us. So that's where the Aretha Franklin, the Whitney Houston, Bobby Brown, Something in Common, where that stuff comes
from. Right.
But I didn't meet, I think at that point, I was just kind of gigging around town, not even trying to make a name for myself, but I was gigging around town. I was gigging a lot. So Sleepy called me to do a session on a song called Somebody for Everybody. And it was for Lil Will. And I sang that. And I didn't hear from nobody no more for a while, from them. And then, you know, Joy asked me to be a member of Heroin, which was a group that, you know, Heroin. So, but we never kind of got it off. We kind of changed positions, like, you know, different people at different times, but never kind of jumped off. But from that, Sleepy ended up, you know, by that time I had been kind of moving, you know, around the circle. I wasn't all the way in the circle yet, but I had been kind of like lingering. And so Sleepy called me to do Sleepy's thing. And he was like, Keisha, I'm working on this album, and I want to know if you do it for me. And I was like, sure. I thought it was a feature, and it ended up being like, no, I need you to sing on, like, every song on the record. What? So we ended up touring that. That ended up being super dope. And iconic as hell. Like, who knows? You know, we never knew what the hell we was doing at the time. And, you know, from there, once I was with Sleepy, then it was like, once again, Joy. Joy was working on her album, and the label insisted. And the label was like, nah, you can't go on tour. Outkast was getting ready to go on tour, like, for the first time. And this was on the Equipment Eye album. And she called me and was like, Keish, the guys are getting ready to go overseas. Can you go? The label won't let me go. I gotta commit to this album. And I was like, sure, when? And she was like, well, they leave it next week. I was like, oh, for how long? Like 6 weeks. You got a passport? Yeah, well, I'm like, yeah, you know, I got a passport. And that was the reason why she called me. She called me because I was somebody that could jump right in the slot, you know, and wouldn't miss a beat. And, you know, I had the credentials and everything that I needed. So, you know, she said, here's one thing. You got rehearsals up until then. Okay, when's rehearsal? She was like, tonight at 6 o'clock. Are you fucking kidding me right now? So I fell into the room, and I didn't know nobody. I didn't know Big and Dre. I didn't know nobody. Nobody in the band. I was like, hi, I'm Keisha. Joy called me. And they were like, yeah, so, you know, just fall in. And they started doing songs and shit. I was like, oh, wait, because I wasn't familiar enough with their stuff to just fall in and be like, oh, yeah, okay, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't have that.
Right.
But, you know, and I did it, and I learned it super fast, and by the third day of rehearsal, I was all the way on. After four rehearsals, we was out. So that's how that came.
What records have you and Deborah Killens done together?
Me and Deborah.
Because I know she sings vocals too.
Yeah, she does. Deborah has sung on, I haven't sung on any Outkast records ever. That's
right.
Deborah, that's Joy, and Peach. Peaches, who she's passed
away. Rest in peace, Peach.
Screechy Peach, yes. Yeah. And that's them. And so by the time I came on board, there was already a sound that was signature.
Right.
To Outkast, and so
yeah.
That's what that was. But Deborah sang on, what song is that? She didn't sing on a lot of cast stuff, but she did. She sang on a few things. You know, Deborah's biggest thing is TLC.
Mm-hmm.
That's all her.
Yeah.
From the beginning. That's all her. So, but yeah, but Deborah and I mostly worked on the road.
Right.
Joy didn't travel.
One of my favorite bass players. She's amazing.
Say it again.
I said one of my favorite bass players. She's amazing.
Absolutely. And the sweetest, just dopest person, really. Like, she's so incredible on her bass, but she's always learning. Like, she's very easygoing. You know, she's not really for the bullshit, but she takes shit in stride. Like, while everybody in the room is like, what? Ah! She's calm and cool in her damn corner, like, man, that's messed up. And that's it. Like, that's all you get.
Right.
That's all you're getting out of her. The best. She's the best.
Yeah, I just noticed her on when Monique had her late night show, and Jim Wright, Big Jim, just on to him.
Yeah.
He's the music director of that show, and I remember seeing her. I was like, man. I was like, I remember her. I was like, because I checked the album credits, and I was like, that's where I know her from, Outkast Records.
Uh-huh.
But
uh-huh.
We got this game we play. It's called the What's Wrong With You game, and I'm very interested to play this game. It's basically an either-or game, and it's not a necessarily artist comparison. It's just who do you have more on your playlist kind of game.
Okay.
And I'm gonna start it off with Marvin Gaye.
Hold on, Keisha.
Yeah.
Before you play this game, I need you to think before you answer each question. Think carefully.
EB, don't
very
influence,
carefully.
I guess. Trying to set me up.
Don't influence,
yes.
I guess.
Also,
he
EB, let me interrupt also, since everybody's interrupting. I had a couple of questions And see, Keisha, you have to understand, I'm only the owner, the CEO and engineer of this show, but they keep me in the background sometimes. They don't let me out.
Yeah, we keep them in the background, you know, because as Pino Grigio gets loose sometimes, it's like we try to keep the show moving.
But I have some very important questions I want to ask her because I thoroughly enjoyed this interview. And I'm sure that the panel will agree, this is one of the best interviews that we've been doing this, 3 years now?
Oh, that's sweet.
I mean this. And I just have a few questions, and then you can play this rigged game that Q-Lin is going to propose,
okay?
Okay. All right, it's rigged.
It's not a rigged game at all.
It is definitely.
It's fabrication. It's not rigged at all. You're making up stuff.
But
go ahead, Will.
But Keisha, honestly, I am a fan. I love your music. And I mean, and the connections and a couple of things. I'll be brief. Your confidence, your passion, your energy. I mean, it is so, and then you mentioned something that extremely important, your preparation. And what I really want to ask about this is because, we do a show called, Monday Night Madness, with Professor Pop Culture on Mondays, right? And we, feature one artist. And we go through their life, their legacy, their career, their motivations, and you just tackled all of this tonight. And I just want to thank you for that. That is so wonderful.
Thank you.
One thing I want to ask, it seems like to me with the people that you work with, Toni Braxton, Whitney Houston, Bobby Brown, I mean, Warner Brothers, and I've Josh Stone, Angie, Outkast, Faith Evans, and we have some more music for you. My goodness, can you tell us how tight-knit is that music community?
I mean, it's, you know, in Atlanta, well, it's very small. So now tight-knit is different than small. Like, it's very small. Like,
I agree.
If you are good, everybody knows who you are. But, it depends upon when you came into it. Like, everybody who came into it, when I came into it, everybody's very, very, like, we support each other, we love each other, we take care of each other in that way. But then you have, like, the younger people that I don't want to call them kids, but you got younger folks that have come out, like, you know, and started doing stuff, and it's just a whole different era. It's like you got the Erykah Badu era, and then you got Ari Lennox era. You know what I'm saying? That's not the same group of people. That's who my kids listen to. You see what I'm saying? So, but there's a lot of respect. There's a lot of respect, and we don't all know each other per se, but we got each other's back. Like, unless you show me, or unless I've found out that there's a reason that I don't need to have your back, you know, then that's just what it is. So it's relatively tight-knit, but mostly amongst, you know, our immediate circles.
Right. And last question. I heard you earlier mention something about knowing the Isley Brothers and so many other greats that we all love and admire. Who and what was your greatest experience working with some other group or some of the group that you were, or maybe part of the family that you would call?
I don't know if I have, all of my experiences are very different. And, you know, I worked with Raphael Sadiq. That was great, but it was very different from Erykah, which was very different from Joy, which was very different from Outkast, which was very, so for each situation taught me something different. And I've been blessed enough to be able to pick and choose what jobs I'll take. Cause I'm not going to work for anybody that I don't respect.
Right.
And so if it's a challenge, but I like the artist and I like the music and I find it interesting per se, I'll take it because I can learn something from it. So every artist that I've been with, from Sadiq to Erykah to Faith Evans, who's totally R&B, you know, to a George Clinton, who's the exact opposite of a Faith Evans, you know, I've gotten something out of something major. Something very valuable out of each experience.
That's incredible. And lastly, where did this confidence come from?
I don't know. At some point, you just kind of got to step into yourself. You know what I mean? I feel like, you know, at some point, you just have to say either you're going to do this or you're not. Like, failure is not an option for me. Like, I can't fall. You know what I'm saying? You find yourself drowning, but you know how to swim, but you just opted out. Like, nah, I don't do that. You know what I'm saying? So for me, it's just, and it goes back to what I was saying earlier. It's just about understanding that the situations don't, they do make you. Situations make you, but you will grow and be, it's about learning from each experience for me. Because people would probably think that, you know, I had an easy upbringing, and it really, it's just the exact opposite. Now, of course, it was not, you know, as horrible as, you know, we know it can be, but it wasn't like, you know, Silver Spoon, it wasn't that shit at all, you know what I mean? Like, mom didn't play that. James Brown didn't play that. You know what I'm saying? Like, you gonna work for yours. Like, that's what it was. Like, God damn, like, calm down. You know what I mean? But that's true. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it wasn't necessarily easy. You just have to, at some point, believe in who you are.
Right.
Whatever that means. Because this time I defied my mother. Because she was like, well, that ain't gonna make no sense. Like, she told me, don't, you know, a vocal coaching agency, everybody gonna do that shit. Either you can sing or you can't. What? That was it.
Oh my God.
But I had it so, it was so mapped out in my head what it was going to be that I just didn't take that to heart.
Right.
You know, I didn't take that to heart, but it took me to do it for her to say, ain't that some shit? Like, I had no idea there was money in this. I tried to tell you. You know what I mean? You just gotta, you know, like I said, you gotta follow your gut and just keep going. Like, when you fall, you fall. You know, and that's where the confidence comes.
Hilarious. You are. You know, I was about to say that. And you know, you're also very funny.
Hilarious.
Hey, thank you so much. And now I'm going to toss it over to Q Lynn. And I want to just say to you, the game is fake, okay? It's a fraud.
I don't care how many times.
I
want to
know why you call it fake. What happened to you when you played?
He won. That's the ironic part of that.
It is rigged.
The games, although I agree. Listen, the rules of the games are, and basically, he says it's rigged because you got to pick what I pick. That's
see,
the rules of the game.
I told
you. If you don't pick what I pick, something's wrong with you. I pick up the rules as I go. That's why he called me.
That's why it's rigged. Okay, I'm trying to understand.
Of course.
Okay.
So what exactly like am I? So wait a minute. Tell me what the rules are. Like, you're going to say an artist and it's up to me to do what?
You're giving it's you like either two or artists or two and, songs.
Yes.
And you say, which is your favorite?
It is rigged.
What? No, not that. It's your favorite. Who do you listen to more on your playlist?
Who do you listen to more? Excuse me.
Yeah, and if you don't agree with her, and if you don't agree with her, she's going to give you a minus. Now, wait a minute.
That's not true. We just going to ignore. No, he said he called me a martyr. That's not true. But, like I said, it's fabrication. We're going to skip on to the, we're going to play the game. I'm just going to ignore everybody. But okay. The first one is Marvin Gaye or Teddy Pendergrass?
Teddy Pendergrass.
There you go. You're talking right. The next one is the OJs.
Teddy Pendergrass because of Howard Melvin and Blue Notes. That's why. But go ahead.
That's why. Right. Yep.
Yes.
Woo.
Right.
I got more material.
The OJs or the OJs or the Whiskers?
OJs for sure.
OJs? Okay. There's a trick. Like I said, it's like tricks in this game, so I make them up as I go. So
see,
that,
I told
those
you.
Bonuses. So
it's rigged.
Either way you go.
It's positive.
No, it's a positive. It's just my opinion. But the next one is Prince or Rick James.
Is who?
Prince of Rick James.
Ooh. Golly.
I love you so much for this, Keisha. I love you.
Yeah, me too, Keisha.
That's tough.
Everything is counting on this, Keisha. Everything is counting on this one.
No, but she's good.
I might have to choose.
She's good, though.
So, I don't know. It's tough because it's for different reasons. Mm-hmm. Who do I have more stuff in my playlist? I got more. It's about equal, but if I might have one more Rick James song,
yeah,
I do Prince.
Okay, like I said, that's a bonus. Either way, if you would answer
it,
that right, because
they're both
musically on the same level. That's why I compare them both because they were multi instrumentalists and wrote their own songs, all that. So either way you went, I would have went with it. And so this is where it gets tough, and he calls it rigged. Because if you get any of these wrong after this,
what do you mean wrong? I thought you was asking me my opinion.
Yes,
that's right.
Exactly.
Well, no, the rules change a little bit here because it's
that's how it's real.
You either or, but
It's
it has
real.
To be. You're going to have to explain yourself, but I already see you're doing a good job at that. You're doing a good job at that because you're giving explanations behind why you're picking your answers. So
okay.
I think you'll be good.
Okay, we'll see.
Okay,
we'll see.
So Miss Patty or Miss Aretha?
Aretha all day.
Yeah.
Okay. Mammy,
like,
Father,
see, favorite singer of all time. Like,
same, Keisha.
Okay.
Same.
Okay. So she's your favorite singer. This is your favorite singer. Mammy, 5 songs right now.
I told you, Keisha. I told you it was red.
Love for Sale.
It's not
Love for Sale. Love
okay.
for Sale. Daydreaming. Yep. Till You Come Back to Me. As long as I got you, then baby, you know that you got me. What's that? All That I Need to Get By.
Y'all
gonna
need.
And, Say a Little Prayer.
Yeah.
Say a Little Prayer.
Yes.
Thank, Respect. Those are just real.
Okay.
Super normal. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
You can accept
okay.
That. Yeah.
I accept that. Okay. The rule is you're supposed to pick Patty. But, since you're not gonna get what's wrong with you.
What do you mean?
You're not.
Cool. You gotta give the rule
you're
not getting at a game.
I told you, Keisha.
I said you just picked the artist that's my favorite.
Keisha, I told you it was rigged.
The rule, but I mean, who we're picking in the thing?
We got more.
And
we
so,
got more to go.
We got
more to go.
Like I said, you. Yes, just one more.
Well,
you didn't get a what's wrong?
No, two more.
This game is lost. That's okay.
Exactly.
No.
It is.
No. I said you didn't get no what's wrong with you. I said you got a negative 12 points. You didn't get a what's wrong with you. You got a negative 12 points.
See?
You did. So
see?
You didn't get a what's wrong with you.
Okay.
I told you.
Okay. The next one is Brian McKnighter, Babyface.
Babyface.
Okay. You're talking right.
Yeah.
You got the answer right. Okay. And then the bonus one is Faith Evans and Mary J. Blige.
Keisha, think before you say
Ooh-wee.
The answer.
Faith is my friend, so I gotta go with her.
Okay, I'll accept
like I said,
that. That's only because it's her friend.
Faith is my friend.
Okay.
Faith is a fucking phenomenal singer. She is
a
phenomenal
songwriter.
Writer and arranger, and she's got a hell of a catalog. Like, when you look, Faith, like, she hardcore, like Faith. I would say Faith because of the writing ability and because she's my friend. And I don't want this shit to surface later on.
And I'll accept that. You know, my answer would have been Mary, but I'll accept it.
Yeah.
Okay, the
but
conclusion
I mean,
of the game is...
Mary. Okay, the conclusion.
The conclusion is there's nothing wrong with Miss Keisha Jackson. See, you win the
of
game.
Course.
I just want to recognize the guest for y'all to get the truth, because y'all never tell the truth. I just want y'all to be truthful about y'all answers.
It's still
real. Y'all say this y'all favorite, but y'all can't name me 5 songs, but you name me 5 Aretha songs, so I accept it. You
it's,
won the game.
It's still real.
I just like antagonizing the guest, because I just think it's fun, but...
Okay, cool.
Because I'm ignorant. I don't have any sense.
Everybody wins.
Sure.
That's the thing.
Everybody
but I will say this.
Well,
I will
no
say this though.
Special,
but let me tell you though, Keisha. Normally, when she asks a question about Patty and Aretha, people cannot name 5 Aretha songs, and
never.
I get mad at them every
That's
time.
Right.
I'm like, it's Aretha. You can name her 5 of her easiest
exactly.
songs.
I think she named 7.
No, she named a lot, and she named some
she
deep
did.
Cuts, and then at the end, she was just like, well, you know, these are just the hits, or whatever.
That's why I believed her. That's why I let it go.
Yeah.
That's why I let it go, because I believed her. And the conclusion is, you won the game.
Okay.
I just want to thank you so much for coming on.
And
your prize is, I'm going to cash up you $2.50, and you can go to a convenience store and get you a 40 ounce. How about that?
That is.
Good.
Okay.
You take it back to the 90s.
Okay.
We'll do that.
Oh,
that's
my God.
That's my voice surprise on the show. No, I'm just playing. Thank you. You're such a music royalty. I just appreciate you coming on. You're one of my favorite singers of all time. Your background
credit is
just incredible. And you're a musical royalty. You're a gem in this industry. And like Will said, your confidence. You just have this valor, this strength and courage when you speak. And it's like everything that you say, I can feel it. And it's such a spiritual connection. And I feel like everybody on this show was like connected with what you're talking about.
Thank you so
when
you're
talking about the your life coach experience and what inspired you to do that. I appreciate all that. But thank you so much for coming on.
You're more than welcome. Thank you for having me.
What else? I know you had the Soul Sister. You're a part of that. Are you looking to get into more podcasting?
I'm not doing that.
I said, are you like going to do another podcast or something, like another project?
I don't know. I thought about it. I got to figure it out. I mean, I got a lot of irons in the fire right now, and right now I just kind of need to sift
Yacht Rock through review.
Some things.
Tell people
yeah,
about
I'm with
that.
Yacht Rock. We're actually going on a cruise tomorrow morning, so
yes.
I've been packing all day. And you know the group Train. Hey, Soul Sister.
Yeah.
They have a cruise that they do every year for charity, and so we're actually going to do that. So that's soft rock, 70s and 80s. That group Yacht Rock Review that I work with, and we just actually put out an album, and a new single's going to be released in the next few days, and stuff like that. So yeah, we're going to take this cruise. I'm gonna give me some sun and bring it on back to the house. Yeah, in the cold.
Thank you, teacher. Thank you so much.
It's been outstanding.
You've been responding to my message because, you know, I appreciate it. And also, just because I met you so many years ago, and I'm still like, I met Keisha Jackson, and she was nice to me and friended me.
You just have to make sure that when we see each other, you remind me.
Well, yeah, and you told me that because I saw you in D.C. that same summer, and I didn't tell you, but I told you on Facebook.
Okay.
And you was like, you got to make me know it's you. But I was like, I didn't want to be a goofy. You know, I was just like, all right, that's cool. But no, I will. I'll definitely remind you.
Okay, cool deal.
Where can we find you on social media?
At Keisha Jackson, K-E-I-S-H-A Jackson, on Instagram, on Facebook. I got two Facebook pages. I have an artist page, and then I have a personal page where I talk lots of shit. And
yes, she does.
Love it.
Thank you so much for coming on.
We're going to have you back. And talk shit with us because we do a segment of raggedy news and savvy news, and we get into what's going on in the world. So we will have you back for that.
Let's do it.
Sounds great.
Yes.
All right.
And actually, that's on Twitter too.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
You're like the Chaka Khan level of, like, for me,
man,
as a musician. Yeah. It's like Chaka Khan.
Yeah.
It's like Michael Jackson level interview. So I appreciate it.
Great. Great
you
stuff.
So much, even though you see it.
All right, guys.
I will. I think
CD is too. It's okay. We know.
That's a trip.
All right. I'll see y'all later.
Oh, this is Lady.
All
right. That's Lady with Anthony Davis.
Hey.
Yeah. This is the jam. This is that blue light in the basement. Y'all need to get off the phone and call somebody.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. I'm
out
of here. I'm
going to
go because I
got
a
cruise
to catch early in the morning.
Go ahead,
Keith.
Thank you. All right,
love. Bye-bye.
About the little things they do that just mess me over, yeah. I was better off alone.
Hey, what are you doing?
I became numb and insensitive. Started being bitter and cold. Tuning in and listening to pimps on the radio. And you know, it started making sense to me. But that's when I met my lady.
I was was on the verge of being through with the pain. Didn't see a reason to try. Couldn't understand what all these fools kept singing about, till I became one of them. Became your lady. Everything started to change. Happy I became your lady. My life will never be the
featuring Keisha Jackson, and we're back. This is the Soul Savage Show. Hey guys, Q Lynn, hey, our condolences, number one, and number two, so happy to have you. You just couldn't stay away, could you?
Yeah, well, I was sitting here, I'm right here in my brother's business, and I was like, man, I'm bored. I was just listening on the lines and just conduct the call line or whatever while y'all were on. But I was listening to the interview. I was like, hell no, this is one of my favorite background singers of all time. Not even just background singer, one of my favorite vocalists, like, period. Yeah. And I was like,
oh,
I
man.
Got, you know, and she's been a part of, and she's done tour with my favorite artists of all time. So I was just over here in a frenzy. And it's sort of like a daycare center too, because like, we got my little nephew here. We got a special guest in here, not just on the line. I know EB's getting ready to introduce our special guest. Thank you for staying on for so long. But we also running a Soul Savage Radio Daycare Center. So if y'all hear a baby in the background, it's my nephew. he's cheesing and killing the Capri Sun right now. So
yeah, no,
I'm talking to my brother. Well, come on.
You
got to handle it.
All right.
No.
Oh man, like, this is too
glad
good.
I'm glad Q-Lynn came in because when she told us that she wasn't going to be here, and I was like, I mean, do we continue the show? Do we stop the show? But I'm like,
oh man,
I want it to be kind of consistent. And then I'm like, well, I never really book the guests. It's always Q-Lynn that does that. So then I panicked and I was like, oh, we don't have a guest.
Oh man,
I'm like thinking to myself, and I'm like. We don't have a guest, so I called my sister because she got all the connections, and I'm like, hey, who you got? And she's sending me people who are all great people, but I was like, they're not music people. Like, who is? And then she was like, well, you know music people. And I was like, I do. She was like, get on Facebook. I was like, oh, I forgot I have Facebook. And I got on Facebook, and it just so happened that the first status message I saw, it was from Keisha. And I was like, oh, I forgot I know Keisha.
Oh, man.
And I just sent her a Facebook message. I didn't even send it to her personal account because I was nervous. I sent it to her professional page because
right.
I didn't want to be that guy to be like, hey, you know, do me a favor because you're my friend or whatever. And she was just like, of course. So I was happy that she came on. So thank you, Keisha, again. It was a great interview. I'm glad Q-Lynn is here. Right now, we actually have another special guest. He's going to come on. Is a friend of mine. I believe Q-Lynn knows him as well. He is like music extraordinaire. Yeah. Motown is his thing, but he also does this thing called the current R&B bangers. So he bridges the gap between the old and the new. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Junior of Junior World of Soul.
What's going on, y'all? What's going on?
They love you.
Randy Watson. That interview was dope. I must say, y'all, I was in it. I was in it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring you on, I mean, partly because, like, you my boy, and also because, I know you do the current R&B bangers, and I did watch the last video you put on YouTube, and since Valentine's Day is coming up, there was a song you had on there by Drew Hill that I loved, and I wanted you to come on and talk about it, but first, just tell the people a little about yourself, a little bit about what you do, and where they can find you on social media.
Okay, well, you can find me, Junior World of Soul, on Instagram. Music Soul Nick on Twitter, and I'm starting to do a Facebook, you know, business page, but I just started, so I'm trying to get on that. But I'm really, you can really hit me on Instagram, and that's JR World of Soul, and that's where you can find me. But I'm, like you said, I'm a Motown lover. I love Motown. I love Stax. And you know, R&B is not really getting the respect in mainstream as it used to get. And, you know, you got a lot of people online that's kind of complaining about it. And I feel like if you love R&B music so much and you feel like, you know, you're going to complain all the time, do something. That's why I like what y'all got here with, you know, y'all, you know, radio show. I like it. You know what I'm saying? Because I like the interviews y'all do. Because, you know what I mean? Like, we don't have that anymore. And I'm like, for me, I just want to bridge the gap. I'm like, we got this young R&B that's out here. You got these new songs that's out here that deserve some shine. But then you got to also know your history. So when I created Current R&B Bangers, what I do is I talk about 4 to 6 new joints that's out that, you know, might not get the respect it deserves. And then I try to end, you know, the show with, you know, a classic joint. You know what I'm saying? Like my last one that you just watched, you know, 35 years ago today, the number one song was New Edition's Mr. Telephone Man. So
and they just did New Edition on Monday night.
I talked about it a little bit. I talked about, you know, of course, Ray Parker Jr. who did it. And, you know, just try to bridge the gap, to try to let these young, you know, this young generation know that there was music before y'all. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I really created Current R&B Bangers for real.
And you also do, you're on a syndicated radio show one Thursday a month,
every,
right?
It's called The Goodness, and it's on 89.1 FM. And every last Thursday of each month, I do my top 5 that I pick from, you know, my, you know, current R&B bangers that I do every week. And I pick 5 out of those are my favorites, and I do, you know, 5 of those a month. But it's entitled The Goodness. It's with DJ Dance. He does it every Thursday, and he plays, like, R&B. He plays a little bit of old-school hip-hop. He does a little bit of club, but it's really, really R&B, and he goes from maybe the 60s to the 90s. It's kind of like, if you're from New York, it's kind of like a 98.7 Kiss, basically.
And the station is of course, they can listen online, but where is it based? What is it, Virginia or Maryland?
Oh, it's based in New York. It's based
in New York. Okay.
Yeah, it's in Teaneck. It's in Teaneck.
Okay. Every Thursday. Or, no, what Thursday is it?
I do every last Thursday of the
last
month.
Last Thursday of the month, you can listen to his R&B bangers.
But DJ Dance does it every Thursday. Every Thursday he's on there. So, and it's dope because he definitely plays, you know, stuff that's underground. And he likes that because he want to give, you know, underground a little bit more respect than what it gets. So he plays a lot of underground stuff, too.
All right, and now we're going on the trip next month. You are going, and I'm like, we've been going, and QLN is coming too. So I'm interested to see and hear the conversations that will be had. Now,
we'll have the conversation.
We'll have a conversation.
Me and QLN already started on one of my videos.
Oh,
I'll talk about that.
I'm gonna tell you what happened. They put me and him against each other.
I can't wait for the conversation. I love music conversation.
They put me and him against each other. Well, they started trying to put me and him against each other every week or every trip because we have a different opinion on something, and it's always it's just always so interesting the conversations that happen. So this time I'm very interested to see what kind of conversation. Now I'm gonna have a list of things that are off topic.
I already know what one of the questions is gonna be because
y'all kinda
go through this every show. So I'm like, I already know this is gonna start something. So
yeah, we definitely gonna have a conversation about why you picked Maxwell's. Why you put that album out? The Embryo album out.
I knew it. We bought that whole conversation.
You should have took R. Kelly off there off jump. That should have been just because that album
did not mean one of your questions, I think. It was like
the R album or something like that. But I was like, you should have definitely. And a 112 album, get out of here. Who listens to 112? We ain't gonna go there. But yeah, we definitely have a conversation about that.
Would these be fine China conversations, Q-Lin?
I'm ready.
No, it's going to be a paper plate conversation because I don't know where he's trying to offend or whatever.
No, so. I will tell you this. I will say this about him. Junior is one of the most knowledgeable people. Him and his mother, and I love his mother, Lady E. Shout out to Lady E. I love his mother, and she knows so much about music, but he, like, sometimes he surprises me because he knows things that I don't know, especially like about all that Motown stuff. I love Motown. I grew up on it.
I'm gonna tell you now, Junior. When we get to Austin, I don't really F with Motown. It's only some. It's like the funk records I mess with because I'm a funk
like
kid.
The later,
I'm not necessarily.
Yeah, the Holland, Doja Holland.
Motown records sound like pop to me. Like they was trying to create pop music, and I don't really rock with that.
And they were. Absolutely right. Now my uncle, he's down with the funk. That's where I got a little bit of that from, like the Ohio Players, Earth, Wind, and Fire. Hey. Like that's him. That 70s Lane Parker, you know what I'm saying? Parliament Funkadelic, that's all him. So it's like my mom, that's not her thing. She's not really funk like that. Like stop that James and that.
I'm all the way funk. Nah, I gotta get, we gotta
tell
talk.
From the show and listening to y'all, I know
it's funk all the way. That's why I like such a fan of Keisha Jackson, cause that's all her background is coming from that funk era.
Oh my god.
So it's gritty. It's gritty. I like that gritty shit. It's gritty shit, and I love that.
I wanted to ask her about when she was on, cause when she said she was with Raphael Sadiq, I wanted to ask her because I'm like, I know she was on Josh Stone's Introducing Josh Stone, and she was giving background like crazy, and I just wanted to ask her how that was because she killed Girl, I Can't Believe It. Like, that joint.
One of my favorite songs.
Yeah. So we are Keisha. Right, so you also on a good foot because we all Keisha Jackson fans, so you
I'm
in a good spot.
Oh, I'm absolutely a fan. That's why I was in it. Like I was just sitting on my couch like, yo, I'm loving this right now, yo. Like
right. And so what are you looking forward to with your brand? What are you trying to what's the end game with it in terms of your vision of it?
I just want, you know, with this young generation right now and what I'm seeing, they really don't know their music history to me. And I feel like every time I see these young kids, especially R&B-wise, like the Ari Lennox and you know, the Summer Walkers and all them, it seems like they go back as far. They be like, oh, Beyonce is it. And it's like, huh? That's why I'm glad we got people like her and Lucky Day and all these, you know, these artists that know, like, the Prince and the Stevies and all this. And I just want, you know, people to really just know their history and know that R&B is out there. Because I'm just tired of this narrative that mainstream is giving that R&B is dead and it ain't here. And it's like, yeah, it's here. You just got to search for it. And I feel like a lot of people are complaining about it and nobody really does anything. Like Keisha Moses just said something on her Twitter a couple of weeks ago where she was like, you got so many people complaining about it, but ain't nobody doing nothing. So I'm like, if even if I can do a little something, that's what I'm happy with. If somebody can just come to my page and say, oh my God, Drew Hill has a new song. Oh, for real? What did they talk about? And then they go and listen to the song. I don't even have to give the credit for it. I'm just like, look, if you know it's dead, you know it's dead. Because y'all know R&B websites is really hard right now. You know what I'm saying? The only time we get really love in mainstream era is when people talk about the 90s and this and that. And it's like, really? It's a lot more than that. You know what I'm saying? So that's really just my goal, for people to have another outlet that they can find R&B music and, you know, learn a little something. That's it.
Yeah, but sometimes it's like they want to use that for the reason why they don't want to look for it. And most of the time, like, they'll go to the artist page. They just put, we just talked about this some weeks ago. It'd be an artist that just put out an album. And they like, when you going to release a new album? It's like, did you not, like, read the last two posts? And
it just came out.
They just released it. Yeah, it just came out. What you looking at? But, yeah, people just like to ask dumb questions. Or they like to, if they think they got a little bit of knowledge, they'll try to be like, this is the greatest era, and they just stick with that, and then they just get on the internet, just be like, you know, this Outkast album, it was underrated. Like, no, it went double platinum, triple platinum. Like, what you talking about? It's like, what is your reason behind it? But yeah, I get what you're saying, because I was the same way when I started Soul Savages, because I was, most of it was showing music appreciation, and so when I started it, I was specific on who I was talking about, and most of the time, you shouldn't gear it towards what the audience wants. It's about what it is that you say, and I think you do a good job, because you love Motown, like, that's your thing or whatever, and it's like, people will gravitate to what they like or whatever. I may not like it or whatever, but it's like, you know what, you just gotta pick and choose what it is, and sometimes, if you don't like it, you can just still listen to it and learn something or get interested in what they're talking about, so. You might think you like a Motown song that sounds like a pop song. I don't know. It just depends on what it is. It just depends.
Right.
How open I am at the time.
So we are getting, short on time. So, Junior, you got to come back, because I do want to have you back and talk a little bit more about this.
Oh, wow.
But,
no problem,
once again.
I'm I don't mind coming back. I'm here for it.
Yeah,
once
you
again,
come back next week if you want to.
You come back next week. Seriously, come back next week. He's on YouTube, Junior's World of Soul.
Love
He's
it.
On Twitter, Music Soul Nick. It's MUSIQ Soul KNICK. He is a music maestro. He's like one of the souls I gravitate to.
Love
so
it.
Thank you, Junior, for coming on. Like, you've been great.
Oh man. And so have you, EB and Q-Led. Oh man, I was so happy when you said, I'm bored, I'm joining the show. That was
I'm
so
coming,
great. Whitney, oh, excellent as usual. JR, man, oh, and guys, I meant this. That was, that Keisha Jackson interview was one of the best. Wow.
Yeah, Keisha's
what
amazing.
Yeah.
So before we go though, we got, it's Valentine's Day. Everybody got to do a Valentine's Day savvy heathen talk.
I know what yours is, EB.
Grab them by the balls, baby. It's Valentine's Day. Grab them by the balls. Y'all know me.
My nephew's in the room, so I can't say that.
Oh, yeah, my bad.
Yeah, we know.
Oh, my God.
We get you some fine wine and get you a nice conversation going for Valentine's.
That's exactly
that's
right. And look here.
That's what I'm saying.
And look at a little Pinot chocolates is a 420. Boy, you can't beat it.
We out.
Since you've been gone, my life has totally changed. Take a look at me now. I wear a smile on my face. 'Cause there'll be no more sleepless nights. No more crying my eyes out. Oh, Letting you go was the hardest thing to do. Who would have known I'd have the courage to say, you go your way.
Was Keisha Jackson, and you were listening to the Soul Savage Show on Studio W, The Buzz, your global radio network. Right, coming up shortly, you have Mr. Melody and Mellow Moods on here on The Buzz. Man, I want to give a special thank you to Miss Keisha Jackson, daughter of Millie Jackson. Hey, but this young lady, she's her own person. We're talking about, I mean, high energy, personality, passion, man, oh man, oh man, spirituality. Keisha, thank you so much, for being a guest on the Soul Savage Show at, Studio W Buzz Global Radio. All right. Hey guys, hey, keep it locked right here. What do we, oh my goodness. What is this? Cloudy, the Average White Band. Hey folks, let's get it. 24/7, tell a friend about it. StudioWBuzz.com. StudioWBuzz.com.